podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Sportacos Football Stories podcast. I'm Craig Resnick-Hansen, and today I'm joined by Dan Coombs. Dan is the head of global sports content at GRV Media and a writer for United in Focus. Dan is a huge Manchester United fan, so of course we get into the Glazers, Sir Jim Ratcliffe, and most importantly, what it means to be a Manchester United fan in 2024. So sit back, relax, and enjoy our chat with Dan Coombs. Hi, Dan. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Thanks, Craig. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no worries, mate. It's my absolute pleasure. The first thing I want to get to that we get to with all of our guests on here, whether it's, football pundits or, people like yourself who are working in the sort of, the writing space and the blogging space or former players, the biggest topic of our show is all about fandom. And we like to start by getting a little bit of an origin story from yourself as to how you became a Man United fan and when.
Hey, Craig. So, yes, it's a funny one, actually. So this dates back to my school days. Obviously, I was aware of football, United and so on. But, when you're a kid, you don't necessarily get into it. I remember it was 94. Walked into school one day. Suddenly, everyone's staring at you. What are you going to choose? United or Chelsea? And I'm sitting there thinking, I don't know. What are you talking about? FA Cup final that week. And I looked around. I looked around and you got guys saying, choose Chelsea, choose Chelsea. And the other one's saying, choose United. And I looked at it and the smarter ones were saying, choose United. So I said, I'll be with you guys. I'll go with United. And I've not looked back. Obviously, we won that cup final 4-0. I made a point of watching it that weekend. Suddenly I was interested.
And I know things change from era to era, and it's all different now, of course. But about 10 years on from that, did you feel like you made the right choice?
Yes. Look, even 20 years on, 30 years on now? Yeah, 30 years on almost. I still feel like I haven't made the right choice. Look, if I went Chelsea, there would have been some success along the way, some highs and lows as well. But look, United, I wouldn't swap it. There have been some very, very, very big highs. And look, even the lows, we need to say, well, I'm paying for it, paying for the success. Look, it's like, if you speak to a Leicester fan, would you be happy to say in 2013 you're going to win the league in a couple of years, but you're going to get relegated for snap your hand off, wouldn't they? You want those highs.
Absolutely, of course you do. And when you started moving into teenage life and then uni years and working and stuff, have you got a lot of? I imagine you have. Everyone does. Have you got a lot of banter about, oh, you're not from Manchester and you can't be a real fan if you're not from Manchester? Have you had much of that through your life?
You have that. But then, is it kind of like, look, I see it online where you get fans who are based in far-flung parts of the world compared to Manchester. And they are more committed than fans from England, almost in one sense, in that they wake up at 3 a.m. to watch a 1-0 defeat against Bournemouth or whoever, and they'll live it. And it's the same, it's the same philosophy I go by. That it doesn't matter where you're from, if you're genuinely committed in terms of your passion for the club, nobody should be able to take that away from you. I mean, look, you might get people who say, oh, yeah, are you there every week? No, I'm not there every week. I'd love to be. But at the same time, I'm covering the game from a different perspective in terms of, covering it for our websites and so on and giving different perspectives. And, I think we do a really good job of that.
When did your fandom sort of transition into becoming a profession? I know that you've been working in sort of as a journalist for a long time. When did you, was it straight into United related content, or did you have some years where you were just covering the overall game? How did that whole journey pan out?
Funny thing is, so even again, dating back to when I was at school, I used to produce, like just a United magazine just for myself, just because I it was just something I was passionate about. And I realized at some point that I wanted to go into journalism. I did news. I come from a news background. I've worked in newspapers. At some point, I figured out that I'd had enough of doing news and I wanted to move into sport. And that kind of the opportunity kind of came my way. And it wasn't, I was covering at one point, I was trying to be as neutral as possible. So I almost didn't want to give away that I was a United fan because I was worried it would come across as too biased in my writing. So I was covering each and everyone, every single club as much as, because, just various reasons. But and at some point that flipped, and we've got a United site, and the second we got involved in that, I can let it all come out now, and let the United fandom come out. I don't have to pretend to be impartial, if that makes sense. So it was kind of a natural transition, in some ways, but yeah, it haven't always been as forthcoming with it.
Yeah, you touched a little bit there on the sort of the club's global reach, and I guess that's sort of one of the byproducts of being such a big club. A lot of big clubs nowadays have that, and there is, as you mentioned, on social media, especially on Twitter, there's this sort of ongoing debate between what seem to be called legacy fans and sort of global fans, I guess you would say. Where do you see that going in the future, and do you think it could be a little bit toxic to have all fans of one club sort of divided between each other?
Yeah, I don't think anybody should really be kind of, what's the word, pocketed in a certain bracket, although it does tend to happen. I don't think it's healthy. It's like all walks of life, isn't it? You can, away from sport, you can pocket and say, that's a working class person, that's an upper class person. I don't think it's necessarily healthy, but I mean, I see the point. I think the so-called legacy fans will feel in a superior position because you maybe have grown up in the perspective, look, my grandfather went to watch United and was there at Old Trafford, and my father did, and so do I, and I'm carrying it on. And with 100% of respect, that should be cherished, as part of what makes United great. But it is at the heart of it a family club. It's also a global club. A lot of the revenues United bring in, a lot of the global reach and the money they're able to spend on players, that all comes because the club is worldwide, and they have a massive audience. So I think the two should go hand in hand, and it's just about a bit of respect and seeing the other side. Nobody's better than the other. One might have more of an opportunity than the other, just because your fan in India doesn't have the opportunity to go to Old Trafford every week doesn't mean they wouldn't do so in a heartbeat if they had that opportunity.
Yeah, I think you're right. You mentioned earlier the dedication of getting up at 1 in the morning, for example, to watch teams. I think maybe if there was a bit more healthy dialogue between the two groups, not just at United, but all clubs, so that the global fans could see, the effort and dedication that the legacy fans put in by spending their hard-earned money and getting season tickets and going every week. And then the legacy fans could see how much effort goes in for fans in, Southeast Asia, Africa, America, where they're, watching at ridiculous times of the day. Maybe if there was a way to sort of bridge those two camps, maybe media could be the right outlet for that. But I suppose we'll have to see how it unfolds in the next few years. Overall, though, what would you say? And this probably applies more to the match-going fans, I guess. But what makes the Man United fan base special in your eyes?
That's a great question. I mean, I think what I love about the United fan base is the away fans, in that, you'll be watching a match on TV wherever you are, and the away fans will be the loudest, the United away fans. And I think that speaks to your point previously about the dedication of those fans. It's not cheap. It's not cheap to go to home games. It's not cheap to go to away games either. And the kickoff, for example, this coming week against Brentford, United playing at 8 p.m. There's no trains home, I mean,
Oh, God.
on Easter weekend, Easter Sunday, everything's going to shut down, but they will put their hard-earned cash. I mean, the other, was it early last season, United played in Moldova, and fans, just for it was just a standard, standard kind of Europa League group stage game, and you got fans, flocking over there in their thousands, and that is a huge expense in a era where the cost of living crisis is not easy, and they'll just do it, no questions asked. It's part of the passion, and I think that's what makes fans special. It's not unique to United, obviously, but I think the United fans do it better than anyone.
Well, there is a very dedicated fan base there and a historic fan base with a lot of passion, a lot of love for the club and the history of the club. In what ways would you say the current ownership, as the Glazers in particular, are, would you say they are disrespecting the fan base?
I think they've never engaged the fan base. That's been the problem. I mean, I remember back in, was it 05 when they took over? It was just at, the scenes outside Old Trafford in terms of, the Glazers needed security escorts to get in, because before they even, came in, looked at coming into the club, or when they were doing, there was no dialogue with fans. It was just this corporate entity looking to take over, and everything we feared has been the case. I mean, I remember I was part of, I think, a group called Shareholders United back in 05. Didn't amount to anything in terms of actually managing to stop them, but it was emblematic of the fans wanted to do something, and it was just a wall of silence from the Glazers. And Ferguson was able to prop it up. Many would have loved it if he'd actually come out swinging and tried to do something about it, but I mean, it was partly his fault in terms of that they got involved in the first place. But yeah, Ferguson propped up what against the Glazers' deficiencies just because he was so successful. So the second he left, everything came tumbling down. In terms of that, there was no structure. David Gill leaving was a huge loss as well, and they put in Ed Woodward, who quite frankly should have been sacked after one summer in charge, but he was able to fester on for another, what, 8 9 years in charge, and that showed their disregard and their disinterest in improving the club. Their task was just throw money at it, or we will appoint someone who we trust, but we don't know if he's any good. You'll see what Ineos are doing now. They're doing a bit of a root and branch overhaul in terms of who they're looking to appoint, and appoint people who are best in class. We've never had a director of football appointed at United who's actually worked elsewhere. It took till 2019 to appoint one. John Murtough, he's never worked in that role elsewhere, so how can you appoint them in that role? So, I mean, the Glazers, they just don't know what they're doing. They never have, and it's been tough from that perspective.
You mentioned the arrival of Ineos and Sir Jim Ratcliffe. How optimistic are you that his arrival will make some positive changes to this sort of mismanagement of the club from the top? Do you think that, well, not just yourself, but the sort of temperature check of the fan base online and in person, how's the vibe right now about Ratcliffe and how's the optimism?
A year ago, it was very split. And if you'd have said we're going to get minority investment, we've been very sceptical, regardless of who it was. As it is, the minority investment looks like it's going to have some teeth. So Ratcliffe and Ineos are actually going to have some power, and the Glazers seem to be stepping back. Whether that happens, we'll see. But they've been given kind of carte blanche to get involved and make the changes. They've got all the right intentions at the moment. Whether it's successful or not will come down to the decisions they make. So who they appoint, who the appointees sign, what they do with the manager, what happens with the stadium. It's all going to come down to decisions. But at the moment, it seems like, look, there's actually something moving. It's actually something happening, some ambition. Everything Sir Jim Ratcliffe says looks to be from the heart. He's not there to make money. He's in it for the passion project. You can kind of take that at face value, if you will. I'd like to think so. So there's reason to be optimistic. Let's see how it goes. I mean, in 2 years' time, we might be able to analyze things and say, look, you didn't get this right, you didn't get that right. But right now, let's get behind them, let's be positive. It's quite an exciting time.
Well, when there was initially that sort of bidding war, and it looked like the Glazers were going to sell the whole thing, and there was Ratcliffe, and there was that Sheikh Jassim, and there was that like Scandinavian social media guy,
Oh,
I
yes.
remember. At that time, it looked like, from what I could tell online, a lot of the sentiment was about we want Sheikh Jassim, and people were a bit cold on Ratcliffe. Would you say that from where you're standing, from what you're seeing, I mean, you must see a lot of United takes on a daily basis, far more than I do. Would you say that people are sort of open to Ratcliffe now and they're ready to give him a chance?
Yes, so I think what happened before was that you had one party, which was Sheikh Jassim, more or less running their campaign via the media, which would be, leaking to prominent journalists, from Sky Sports or won't name them, and getting their information out that way. Not really communicating with the Glazers themselves or the Reign Group, which were operating the process. And then you had Ineos, who were very quiet publicly, but they actually held the necessary talks behind the scenes, found out what the Glazers wanted, didn't slag them off, and made sure that they found a way to get it done. So, were they the richest group of the two parties? Possibly not. But they were the smartest group, and I think that in itself is reason to be encouraged by their deal making ability. And I think there are a lot of skeptics now who would probably wish they could maybe delete some tweets and so on in there about their anti Ratcliffe. It was just silly to be so anti at that point. You can have your favours, but I think generally speaking, the fan base is now okay. You've got us on board. Let's see what you can do.
Okay, well, obviously there's not a lot that they can do for the rest of this season. We're going to see hopefully a lot of movement from a United perspective with Old Trafford and with the summer. As you said, they're starting to appoint people, and they're already starting to do that, so that's good. But other than that, there's not much they can do until the end of the season. So, what would represent success for the rest of this campaign, given that the summer will be time for optimism and change, but for now, you just need to get through the rest of this campaign. What would represent sort of a good ending to the season, do you think, from a fan's point of view?
It's not been an easy season. Multiple factors involved. Injuries have played a part. Ten Hag hasn't got everything right. A lot of players haven't performed. So it's not been easy. And look, if I say, look, our objective at this point, or one of the two objectives, is to get into the Champions League spots, that would have been seen as like a minimum requirement at the start of the season, which kind of shows how what a backward step we were at. Top five might get Champions League football next season. I think that's imperative. Is huge to get in that Champions League for next season, because Champions League is a different format next season. It's almost like a mini Super League, and you're going to get additional revenues with that, and that will make everything a lot easier. But it's not going to be easy. There's some tough games. The FA Cup is huge as well. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I would have said, look, we've got two games upcoming against Liverpool, and let's win one of them. That's got to be an absolute must. We've won one, so that's put us in a good place. I'm not going to count my chickens against Coventry City. That's going to be a difficult game regardless. And then you've got the final against either Chelsea or City, if we get there. So those are going to be tough. But look, if we win the FA Cup, I mean, that is going to be huge. That will, probably most fans would have said, look, regardless of what happens, winning the FA Cup this season would be, a massive success after the final defeat last season. That'd be two trophies in 2 seasons. I mean, I think the key is just for Ten Hag to have some momentum. I'm not buying into this manager talk, let's replace him or anything like that. You don't want to change too much at once anyway, with everything that's going on behind the scenes. So I think in a way, success would be stability. Success would be that Ten Hag will do enough to prove he wants another season, and just for us not to rip everything up. If we get I think he needs to get one of those objectives, at least get to the FA Cup final, because I think if you do lose to Coventry, all those discussions about his job become back get back on the table again. So we need to win that game, get to the final, and just be in the mix for Champions League spots. We've left ourselves a lot to do, but obviously in the last week before the break, Tottenham and Villa both drop points. So the door's open, but there's a lot of tough games. So we just have to kind of see how we go from that front. But those are objectives.
Well, Dan, let's end on an optimistic note. What would you say has been your favourite memory following the club?
Probably quite easy in terms of the two Champions League wins. I mean, just that's the pinnacle, isn't it? Yeah, 99 and 08.
Can't get much better than that.
You can't. But you know what? Part of it for me is passing it down. My son's a United fan. And watching the Liverpool game recently with him, you know, we're special, both celebrating he's nine. So celebrating the last minute winner. That was special in terms of just from a personal point of view. You know, that doesn't top the Champions League wins and so on. But just having that shared experience and passing it down a generation and so on, that is something that's quite special to me, and it's great to experience, and it's part of football, isn't it? It's what you love.
Dan, it's been an absolute pleasure catching up with you. Thanks so much for coming on to speak to us today. Best of luck for the rest of the season. Hopefully you can burst your way into those top five places, which I think will almost certainly mean Champions League football. It's not in the bag yet, but I'm pretty sure, you know, with the likes of City going far in the Champions League and West Ham in the Europa League and such, I think we will be picking up that fifth spot. So hopefully you can get your way in there.
Let's see what we can do. Start with a win this weekend, and then we've got Chelsea and Liverpool after that. So let's see in a week's time.
Cheers, mate. Thanks so much.
No worries. Thanks, Craig.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Sportacos Football Stories podcast. It was such a pleasure talking to Dan. We can't wait to bring you more chats with fans from across the footballing landscape, from ex-pros to bloggers, YouTubers and more. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing. If you really liked it, give us a 5-star review wherever you get your pods. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time on the Sportacos Football Stories podcast.
Podcast Network.